Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. With the workforce changing again, employees moving from remote work to a hybrid situation, and others going back to the office full time, and some of them not very happy about it, I thought now was the perfect time to bring in one of my favorite people, Kate Ekman, author of The Full Spirit Workout, a 10-step system to shed your self-doubt, strengthen your spiritual core, and create a fun and fulfilling life. Look, we don't want to have gone through COVID and lockdown and everything that was surrounding that and not live a good life, right? So she's the perfect person to join us today. We talk about perfectionism and procrastination and what's really going on. And since Kate is a former athlete who was constantly judged by performance, she really understands perfectionism at a deep level and how detrimental it can be to success. One of the reasons I love talking with Kate is that she's fun to talk with, she loves to laugh, and she looks at life from a perspective of courage, authenticity, and passion. And we talk about that too. So let me tell you a little more about her. She is a Columbia University certified executive coach who works with leaders in business and sports. She's an expert in communications, performance, and mindfulness, a TV personality, accomplished entrepreneur, and former elite athlete. Kate's also a meditation teacher and course creator for Insight Timer. And I want to give out her website. It's Kate Ekman TV. And the name of the book again, The Full Spirit Workout. Here's my guest, Kate Ekman. Kate Ekman, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicki. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, and I should say welcome back because we talked last time in summer of 2021 as we were all easing back out into the world. Now we're out and about, at least for now. And a lot of people who were working remotely are in a hybrid situation or are being told to move back to an office environment. So I think now's a great time to check in with you, to check in with ourselves, and revisit the Full Spirit Workout. But I want to know what's been happening with you since we last talked.
Thank you for that. I actually started a new position at a tech company. We're launching a new social shopping live stream platform. So it's a QVC home shopping, only 24/7 online that anyone can participate. And it's a lot more fun. Actually, it's not so polished and you don't have to be so perfect. It's a really great way to connect with your audience and new and old customers alike. So I really like that because I'm all about connection. So that's fun for me. And I like people, helping people really connect in an authentic way with others. And I've been doing my full spirit workout exercises because I'm not immune to the absolute insanity that is our world right now. And I think that we all need to take more pauses and more adult time out, quite frankly, because I don't know about you, but I just had a lot to process both in my personal life and then in the world at large. And I think giving people permission and just saying it again and again to really take that time to check in with yourself because it's an overstimulating, exhausting time right now.
Yes, and I heard you say the word perfect, and I want to talk about perfectionism and procrastination today. We'll go deeper into that than we did last time. But for those who didn't hear our last conversation, I just want to give a quick snip here on what we mean by full spirit workout. And you really mean having the courage to be who we really are, to live authentically with passion and purpose, right?
Absolutely. Everyone's heard of the full body workout that's always advertised at the gym. And this is counterintuitive to that. This is not the hustle and grind and forcing and controlling to make anything happen. This is more about stillness. This is more about going within and really nurturing your inner child, nurturing your mental, emotional, and spiritual muscles and getting those really fit and strong. And the benefit to that is that when we do that, then we naturally attract all of those things that we crave and desire in the external world, the relationship, the love, the money, the experiences, the opportunities. So it's worth its weight in gold by taking a moment to do these exercises. And yeah, it's really about having the courage to be who we really are. And I help a lot of people and clients discover what that even, how do you even know who you are? And I think it starts with really identifying your values, what energizes you, who do you feel your best around? What are you doing when you feel really lit up? What energizes you? So taking a moment to really sit and reflect and journal on those things is really going to steer you in the right direction.
Right, right. So for listeners who didn't catch the first conversation and want to catch that as well, just go to conversationslive.net and type in Kate Ekman or Full Spirit Workout, and that podcast will pop right up. I want to make sure we mention that because we talk about different things there. So let's dive into perfectionism because it's a huge thing. It gets in the way of many great possibilities and it makes a lot of people very unhappy, the perfectionist, and probably those around them too. It can be difficult to live with somebody who's a perfectionist. And because of your background as an athlete, you understand the power of sports psychology. So let's take a look at this. And I used to view it as a strength, and obviously it is not. I know better now. So let's dive into perfectionism from your perspective as you know, sports psychology, as a former athlete, how you work today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, performance and perfectionism went hand in hand as a young athlete, even, and overhearing a swim coach at the swim club say to my mom that he didn't think I was a very good swimmer when I was just 4 years old, and how sad that I took that as a little girl and thought, oh gosh, I have to really perform and be perfect and really compete at a high level so that I'm safe in the world and my mom and dad will be proud of me. And who knew you had to impress strangers at the swim club? I better really get it together here. And I think a lot of us really take that on either consciously or subconsciously as we go about our lives. And I think we all have a natural desire to want to please mom and dad. And depending on your childhood and what kind of parents you had, that could have gone many different ways. So I have compassion for all of us, even those of us with great parents. They're still flawed human beings too. And so for me, I think perfectionism was always something where if I just do it perfectly, or if I look perfect, or if my life can be perfect, no such thing, by the way, then I'll feel safe. I think at the end of the day, we all just want to feel safe and we want to feel loved. And so if we can switch that into I am safe and loved because I am, or if you identify with a higher power, whether you're a child of God or you believe in something greater than yourself, that certainly helps. But I think the more that we can shift in getting our value from who we are and what characteristics we can offer the world, like compassion, like kindness, things that are free, things that you don't have to go to Harvard Business School, you don't have to make millions of dollars. It's all of those inner characteristics that we can cultivate. And then when we're living our lives from that space, you tend to perform at a higher level. You treat your people better, starting with yourself. And so you're moving into a higher place of creativity and productivity and performance simply by that being your focus, rather than I really have to impress a lot of people and achieve a lot of awards so that I can feel a certain way. And,
right,
and I think
right.
We all experience that. You get all the shiny objects, you get all the degrees and achieve all the things. And after 20 minutes, you're not that happy again, and you're on to the next thing and the next thing. And that's because in my research, and certainly my own life has indicated, none of that stuff outside of us can bring us lasting happiness. It really is an inside job.
Right, right. I want to jump back to something, a word that you said, and that was safe. And the reason I'm highlighting this is I just took a business leadership course, which is about 12 weeks, I think, just once a week. Very interesting people, very eclectic. But some of them were serious business leaders around the globe. And the word safe and wanting to feel safe and not feeling safe came up all the time. And it really surprised me. And I had to kind of sit back and thought, well, I feel safe. And then I started questioning, well, you know, do I do this because I want to feel safe, or am I doing this because it's what I want to do? It really made me look at things differently. And obviously you're seeing this pop up a lot in your work.
Yeah, I think we have to define what safety means. And I certainly, as a whole, feel less safe in the world, and that's in particular because of the gun violence in this country, which is a whole other story. But even just running into the mall yesterday to return something, I hate that I thought about a shooting, for instance. A whole other topic, obviously, for another conversation. But I think a lot of people say what you just said, I feel safe. And if you do, I love that and wonderful. But I notice in so many of my conversations that I have with business leaders or friends or whomever that they don't feel safe. And what right. I mean by that is when they're in a coaching conversation with me, for instance, or just even out to dinner and kind of off the record and out of the office, I see a whole different side to them because in that moment they feel safe. And I think it's led by not just the environment that I'm creating, but it's led by my emotional courage and vulnerability that I'm willing to share how I feel. And it's not about looking cool or I've got all the answers. It's more about sharing, you know, times I've got it wrong or times that I felt a bit sad or let down. And so I just think our road to safety and really punching perfectionism in the face is having a bit more fun, having a bit more courage to try new things, and be willing to put ourselves out there. And as I say, dare to suck, dare to not be great at first or even ever, which is me in dance class. But how liberating is dance class for me? Because it will never be about being perfect or impressing anyone. It is not my skill set. So I invite people to do more of those activities that are really just simply about fun and movement and connecting with yourself and your body, as opposed to I got to be the best or I got to chase this thing to impress a lot of people and make a lot of money. And then I'll feel safe because I'll be someone who does something. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. And I totally get it. And I know in this, you know, some of the situations in this that came up in this conversation during the course of this leadership program were that, yes, the world has changed and people, you know, there's less feeling of safety in the world. But a lot of it was also the work environment. And, you know, people are going back into a hybrid. Most people are in a hybrid situation, I think, if they were working remotely. And some are going into back into the office. And for some, that's causing anxiety because they don't work in a safe environment where they can be free to have thoughts and share creativity without the, you know, the possibility of being dragged down. And then, of course, add perfectionism onto that, and that just exacerbates the situation.
I think there is so much fear in the workplace. And I worked at an organization. I was an independent contractor, but when I walked into the building, and this is a multi-billion-dollar business, tons of celebrities and people like that were in the building, and I called it fear factor. Remember that?
Yes.
They would eat the bugs or whatever else. They would crazy, insane things they would do. And I called it fear factor. I think so many people are operating from fear. And I say this with love. I think so many people are deeply, deeply insecure and haven't done the inner work, haven't done the full spirit exercises to show up authentically as they are, because when you're showing up authentically as you are, you're a happier person, you're treating people better, you're confident in who you are, not like, oh, look how great I am at this job, or oh, look how pretty I am, or handsome I am. And so that's why we can't control others, but we can take the time to do these inner exercises. And what I found is that when I'm doing my inner exercises and showing up really fit on the inside, I'm attracting people at a different level, or there's not as much resistance. They don't have to, you know, attack or feel insecure or threatened. They can be in a place of collaboration. So I think the more that we can come from a place of connection and community and a collaboration rather than competing or judging or how do I stack up against this person? And the other C word, compassion. I mean, really leading with that even when it's difficult. And I think sometimes just being like, wow, that email was really out of line or harsh or annoying, or we've all experienced that, right?
Well, yeah.
I think just it kind of acknowledging it, and I think acknowledging why we were triggered by the email or the person and maybe what we still need to heal within us, and really make the work about us rather than that person's a jerk and I can't stand them. And but I think it's good to we talk about safety, but I think creating a little bit of space for yourself where, excuse me, there's those healthy boundaries and separation between you and others and the workplace where we're not so wrapped up in the culture or the neuroses of our work environment and really come from an independent place.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, along with that goes, you know, don't judge ourselves too harshly, which takes work to do that if you're a perfectionist, but it can be done.
It does take a lot of work, because we are going against years and years and years of programming and messages from society that constantly bombard us with images and quotes and what we should be doing and how we should be feeling. And we think, well, I don't feel any of that. And I offer that if you aren't feeling any of that, or you're feeling like a status quo disruptor or visionary, that's a really great place to be. But with that comes some discomfort. It's uncomfortable. What do they say? It's lonely at the top. I don't look at that as just money. I look at it as if you're choosing to go against the grain, if you're not, succumbing to the insanity around you, if you don't want to follow the leader and you really want to be the leader. I think if you want to think outside the box and that way, and you're uncomfortable, I think that's a great place to be, despite the fact that you're uncomfortable and, knowing that you're, blazing your own trail, so to speak, and really stay true to that. But we stay true to ourselves when we get really, really clear on what our values are. For instance, my top three that come to mind are freedom, integrity, and authenticity. So I know if there's something I'm upset about in the workplace, I'm like, because that person's acting out of integrity, or when I show up as my authentic self, people aren't vibing with it because they want you to just nod in agreement. Mm. They don't want you to tell them how you really feel, even though they're requesting that. So I think the more that we can really get clear on that, stay true to those values, understand what's happening when they get challenged, and having a game plan for that is really important and essential.
Yeah, I love it. Totally agree. And my top three would be pretty close to that too.
What are yours?
I don't reel them off, but obviously freedom is really important to me, and integrity is really important to me, and authenticity is really important to me. To add to that, I'd probably just say family. Even though I'm a distance from my family, I make the effort to stay in touch with them almost every day. So
I love that. I think you just brought another one, and I love my family, of course, too, but humor. And I think there's times where I said to a friend this morning, I need more fun in my life, and I'm proud of everything I'm accomplishing, but see, I have to put my money where my mouth is. And you need to have more fun, even if that means disappointing someone or letting someone down, or not sending all the emails immediately. I think we all could use some more fun and lightheartedness in our lives, and some more playfulness, like
yes.
A child.
Yeah, I totally agree. Having this conversation, and I think I probably mentioned this on the show before, but there are times when you need to meditate. There are times when you need to dance around like a six-year-old with the music full blast. And there are times when you need to go out and create an adventure, even if there's not one around. Go create one and just have fun. It's listening to those times, to see what's best going to lift you and break through whatever you're feeling right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's also a time to, it's never fun or never convenient to maybe walk through a little bit of your grief that you haven't fully done. Maybe to sit and stare out the window for an hour. And that sounds probably really uncomfortable and indulgent, and another reason why we need to do it, to really reflect and process and check in with yourself, because so few people really check in with us. You get the kind of, hey, how you doing, which they're not really asking. It's just like an in passing thing. So I think if you can really sit and ask, hey, how are you doing today, and really listen for the answer and be honest and not judge it. And I had to do that this weekend. I had all these plans. My body's like, nope, I'm not doing that. I'm tired and I want to rest. I'm like, oh, you're so boring. But I think there's a time where we need to, I think sleep is a spiritual practice, and there's time where our body is just, I think when we're up-leveling, I think a lot of people are doing that now too. They're kind of sick of the old way of living, and we've all been called to up-level in some way. We're living in a completely different world than even a couple of years ago, and that requires energy, and that requires a new brain in certain ways. And so give yourself a little extra time, and if you're feeling a little off, like I quite frankly was this morning, it's like, be gentle. Okay, what's going on here? You think if my 3-year-old was like this, I'm like, yeah, you can stay home from nursery school this morning. It sounds like you need a little rest and don't need to be around a bunch of screaming three-year-olds today. And I think adults can be the equivalent of screaming three-year-olds. So
you've got that right. Oh, you're so spot on. And you know what? I am grieving right now. My dog died a month ago. And even though people might say it's just a dog, that I can't say too much because I'll start boo-hooing. But he was my best buddy, you know, and it's tough. And you do try and brush it off with dive into work and don't take the time to think about it. And you're right. You have to take the time to listen and tune in and to what's going on, because it's the only way we really get through those things.
What was your dog's name?
Dylan Thomas.
He sounds like a ladies' man or a rock star. Then he attracted lots of attention at the dog park.
Oh, he did. Everybody loved him for sure.
That's amazing. What breed was he?
He was a border collie. Yeah, and I, you know, I have to say this because I was so touched. I had so many cards from people saying how much they were going to miss him. I've had people on the street who knew us who burst into tears when they found out he was gone. And I'm hugging them. I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm the one who's supposed to be grieving here. But it's so touching that he touched so many people's lives. And, you know, so there's no such thing as just a dog.
Well, I'm so sorry. And we, you know, we share that. I lost my best friend, Teddy, a mini golden doodle, about 2.5 months ago. And it was, you know, he was 12, so 12 years my best friend, and it was devastating. And he died right when I moved cross country from New York City to California, and it took me out. And I want to just weep talking about it too, because but it speaks to that dogs are just so pure, and they're just so
right.
Full of love, and they want nothing more besides some food and some walks and a nap to love and be loved. And I think there's so much that we can learn from them, and I wish we could all be more like dogs. And so I have no shame in the tears or something. It means that we loved them, and I think a lot of people have lost dogs or loved ones you know, recently, and we've got to give ourselves the proper time to let out the full extent of the grief, and to really think of what we want. You know, how are we going to replace that? They're irreplaceable, but it's like, okay, we're going to have to fill ourselves up. That was a lot of love to replace.
Yes, you're so right. It's a lot of love. Even as I was getting ready for today's interview, I do my stuff and I run through my notes real quick. And then I gather my stuff, take my laptop into the room, the recording room, and make sure everything's set up, get my water. When I started doing that, my dog would just get up, whatever he was doing, he'd get up, he'd go sit on his bed and wait there because he knew he was going to get a cookie because he had to be quiet. He's so precious. And I was like, I almost went to get his bone and I was like, oh no, he's not here anymore. So,
but he is there. I feel Teddy everywhere, and I know that your dog is there too. And they're still loving us, but there's nothing like them wrapping their little paws around you and giving you kisses.
So I know.
My heart goes out to you. It's so hard. And I think a lot of people listening have experienced the loss of a pet, and that there's no other pain to describe it. It is a specific type of pain that only people who've had pets that they love so much for years understand. And so, but hey, I'm all about connection. So I think that's something to connect us, and I'll take all the universal connection I can get between people right now.
Yes. And I'm sorry for your loss too. It is terribly hard. And we're procrastinating on talking about procrastination here. But
you know, because go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I wanted to talk about procrastination because, and this goes back to my dog. I was interviewing Matthew Dix the morning that my dog died. And we were chatting afterwards. I said, I have to go because my dog, he was acting weird and I want to make sure he's okay. And his book was Someday is Today. His whole book was about don't put things off, stop procrastinating, don't wait for the perfect situation, the perfect day, the perfect body shape, the perfect whatever. Someday is today, because you might not have a tomorrow. And then that was the day my dog died. So it was kind of ironic there.
That's profound.
Yeah, because I was going to take him. It was sunny, and I said, okay, after I've done this, we'll go down to the beach. But we didn't make it, unfortunately. So I wanted to begin with perfectionism because I think that's a huge part of procrastination. But, you know, we're all in this situation now. I hear a lot of people are dissatisfied and want to make this change, but still keep putting it off. So how can we bust through this procrastination and get to what is really at the heart of why we're putting things off that we say are important to us?
Oh, well, you said the magic word, which is why. And listen, I get procrastination because we have to show up differently and a different version of ourselves. We have to step outside the comfort zone and really, lean into something new and fresh. We can't just dial it in. So we kind of put off things that in many ways I think mean the most to us. But when we have that really strong why. So for instance, with this book, and I was on a very tight deadline. So I think give yourself a tight deadline, put it into your calendar, block off that time, because if a lot of people, if it's not there, they don't do it. But for me, I had such a tight deadline. I started writing, 2-3 weeks into lockdown in 2020. I just finished a massive master's degree at Columbia University. And I'm like, wow, I've got to shift gears here and produce 90,000 words in a couple of months, and it was disorienting during the lockdown, and there was a lot of fear and uncertainty. But I think what happened for me is besides that I love to write and I just really dove into the creative process, I had a really strong why. For me, it was Sam and Ross, my loved ones who died by suicide a year almost to the day of one another in 2014 and 2015, and they kept me going. And I called on them. I'm like, listen, I'm doing this project for you and people who struggle with mental health, which is everyone, I've discovered. And so asking for help, and I would ask for their guidance, and I would meditate, and they would help me with subheaders and what to write about. And I found myself just being so channeled and the words just flowing out because I called that in. And so when we have that really strong why, then ask yourself, why is this important to me and why right now? And listen for the answer from your heart, from your wisdom, from divinity, not your ego. That will keep you going, a cause or greater than yourself, on the days and in the moments where it's really hard to show up for just you.
Yeah, I love that. You talk about a trip that you took to Costa Rica, and you say it's not the physical journey, it wasn't the journey to Costa Rica that made the difference, it's the journey inside. Talk to us about what that means.
Yeah, I think Costa Rica, and I was, in the middle, which I still am, of a forward-facing career where I'm on camera a lot, and it is all about, looking perfect and performing perfectly. So I've had a lot of that to genuinely overcome. And I get to Costa Rica, and it's 8,000 degrees. I looked and felt just gross and horrible. And I was, I was a competitive swimmer for so long, and obviously had a very nice figure because I trained 24/7, and I was like 18. And so being, 20 years past that, and being back in a swimsuit in front of a bunch of people, and not having the quote unquote perfect figure by any stretch, was so liberating. And I was just muddy and dirty and sweaty and gross, but it was so liberating because I kept looking around waiting for someone to care or judge, and nobody did. And it just brought me back to my childhood where you don't care about any of that stuff. You're just out in your swimsuit. You don't care what your thighs look like. You're not like, am I cute enough? Do I look fat in this? What are people thinking? You're just all about play and having fun. And I found myself in those moments that I hadn't allowed for myself in years, which is really sad, but then was able to do that there. So I offer that up to anyone listening. Maybe it isn't about going to Costa Rica or going on a trip for you, but it is about going to a place where you can just let it go and let it be and be fully immersed in who you are in the present moment and let it all hang out and just be a bit more lighthearted and playful with yourself. And I think when we really own that, nobody cares or judges, because when we're so confident in it, people are like, oh, wow, look at her. She's like confident. There's nothing to judge except I wish I could be more like that.
Yeah. And I wanted to touch quickly on endorphins because our body chemistry is magnificent. We're just one big biology or chemical experiment, if you will. If you look at it, I've talked with a few scientists over the years, and it's amazing how we can change. We can help to lift anxiety and depression. We can help to lift our mood, release anger. One of the things that I found interesting, I came across this, it's quite well known, a Zen tradition, where they used forced laughter as a practice. See, we start laughing straight away. But you know, I've just worked with a group that was so joyless. It was torture for me. But
sorry, it's like not funny but funny.
it's like oh my gosh, does anybody ever smile or laugh? But it's so important, and one of the ways that we can help lift ourselves, and it also has shown that it's had neuroscience shows it's had lifting effects on illness too. So what do you want to tell us about endorphins and how we can make them work for us?
Yeah, I think when we think of endorphins, or it's always got to be this huge, grand thing to experience joy. I got to take this $10,000 trip to Europe and see all the sights and taste all the food and do all the things, have all the cute outfits for Instagram. And if that's your thing and that's your type of income, amazing, and go for it. And please send me the pics or post them so we can all see. I think, though, I love Europe and travel and Italy and pizza as much as more than the next person, I'll say. But when I did my research on endorphins and what boosts them and joy, it was fascinating, because people could have said whatever they wanted. Not one person talked about material items or possessions. It was simple things. One woman this woman is very, very wealthy and successful in her career, has a great marriage, and her answer was about watching her 2-year-old son watching the bees doing their job and seeing the awe and wonder in his eyes. And I thought, whoa, a woman who has everything in the material world. And just even my parents, who have been there, done it all, you know, very successful people, and they talked about just that morning ritual of having their coffee with the dog and connecting and just having that simple moment, a part of their routine, like, I'm waking up and this is what I do. And so I invite you to think of those simple pleasures that we all take for granted. And for me, 9 times out of 10, they don't cost a penny. And for me, they involve just connection and turning off all the distractions and just being with someone and having a meaningful conversation, and, you know, or even with yourself. So a walk in nature worth $1 million to me. So think about that for yourself, but just know that, because I know, you know, I was on a radio show recently, and a lot of people are really struggling financially, especially after the pandemic, but knowing that there's those simple pleasures that have been scientifically proven to boost your mental metabolism, as I say, to boost your endorphins, and one of the quickest ways to get there is a walk in nature, and that's really available to all of us.
Yes, that's my number one spot there too. And I know you're big on signs from the universe and symbolism. I'm not a woo-woo person, but I definitely, there are times, I swear, when the clouds open up and the sun comes down and I just think it's my mom, because I'd been thinking about her or something like that, you know? So how does that help you, and how does it help you stay connected?
Yeah, I love that. And I think being open to it too. A friend of mine just lost her dad, and she was just like, I miss you, you know, give me a sign. And I'm very emotional today. I'm glad I already said that. But these things just mean a lot to me. And she said the sky just opened and there was a rainbow. And she said, Kate, it wasn't even raining. And she said, is that you? And she just felt his presence. And for me, I always find, I call them pennies for heaven. I find pennies just always in my path. And I know it's my deceased loved one sending me a message. And in that case, the message is about oneness. And it's, you know, that you are worthy, that you are valuable, that you are loved. And so I think not being so dismissive of these things, being willing and open to ask for a sign. And I'm just feeling really called to read what's right in front of me right now. I have this candle on my desk that says, angels are watching over you, their wings wrap gently around you, whispering, you are loved and blessed.
I love that. I love that. Beautiful. Well, Kate Ekman,
it's comforting, right?
It is very comforting. It's very comforting. And, you know, we'll take all the comfort we can these days.
Amen.
We'll take it all. Well, it's always such a pleasure talking with you. I know listeners can find out much more about you at your website, kateekman.tv. And the book is called The Full Spirit Workout, a 10-step system to shed your self-doubt, strengthen your spiritual core, and create a fun and fulfilling life. And I'm going to share this quote too. It's in your book, and I love this one from Wayne Dyer. He says, abundance is not something we acquire, it's something we tune into. I love that.
Beautiful. And a great reminder for everything that we want, when however you define abundance, whether it's money or time or whatever it is, something that we can always choose to tune into. And that's comforting as well. So thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to give you the opportunity to say a final word to our listeners today.
Yeah, I think, you know, I always find myself saying this same message, and there's many themes of today, but I think reminding you how powerful you are. I think sometimes messages from society makes us believe anything but that, but you truly are so powerful. You can do whatever you decide is important enough and achieve whatever you deem worthy. So I think getting really clear on that, about who you are, what you even want to achieve, why it's important to you, and then really putting action steps together to get there, knowing that you can and will get there because you are so powerful, and do not forget it. Thank you.
I love it. I love it. End on an up note there. Kate Ekman, such a pleasure. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Vicki. Have a beautiful day.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.